You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
This is too good to miss. Mr. Ken Marshall has joined the Hooked on Startups podcast.
Just going M-Dog.
M-Dog. Oh, we were just sharing how, you know, people tend to have this annoying habit of giving you nicknames. But yours is Magma, which is this sort of, which is very pertinent because if you live in the Balearic Islands, which are a selection of islands off the coast of Spain, I think they're having some, oh no, or is it Africa? I think it's Africa. Or maybe both. They're having problems with volcanoes, I think, and magma is... So where did magma come from? I mean, not where did it come from? We all know where it comes from, but where did your nickname magma come from?
Thankfully, I didn't have anything to do with those natural occurrences, but I mean, it's kind of a
weird
story.
I mean, you say that. You can say that here.
Right. The butterfly effect. I was out with brunch or to brunch with actually the CEO of the company, my wife, and we were kind of describing like, you know, the Enneagram personality types, just funny things like that, Myers-Briggs. And he was like, I was like, what do you think of me, Alex, our CEO? And he's like, you are like a volcano. You're kind of like magma. Nobody can really stop you. You can run away and not pay attention to it. He's like, you're a force. And he's like, and Kim, and he turns to my beautiful wife and he's like, you're kind of a calming agent. You solidify that man and make sure he doesn't hurt the rest of us. So that's how it, and then I put it on LinkedIn and it's been a thing ever since. So
your wife sort of pours cold water on you. Is that what you're saying? Or is that?
Often, and sometimes hot water when she's mad at me.
Exactly. So I've heard of this before, the Enneagram. Is that some sort of mythical way of finding out what's going on between your ears?
Absolutely. I mean, just like the Myers-Briggs invented by, you know, two women with no formal behavioral psychology training, the Myers-Briggs dates back to like this goofy dude who used to practice like Eastern mystical arts, but it's been taken and formed into a tool to understand and categorize people. So that's why I like talking about it. It gives you an anchor to talk about person. Like I'm an eight. There's no science. There's nothing behind that, but it lets me say, yeah, I'm going to speak my opinion. I know what I want and I'm probably going to go out and get it. So,
so what have you got? You've got type A personalities and then you got what type, how far down does it go?
ESTJ, if you're talking about Myers-Briggs, there's the, you know, Challenger. If you go off the rails on that, there's the type eight for Enneagram. You know, the DISC personality assessment.
Hey, I've heard
there's all these
DISC
kinds of ways
well,
to slice
yeah.
and dice.
I always thought that I might try and invent my own in the same way that David Bowie used to write songs. So he'd write a whole bunch of lines of stuff, then he'd cut them up, and then he'd sprinkle them all over his duvet, and then he'd sort of reassemble them in an entirely random order. And that's how some of his songs were written. So perhaps you could do the same thing and create your own Enneagram. I mean, I'm just throwing out some ideas here, Ken. I mean, this is, you know, this is an open environment. There's no such thing as a wrong suggestion here, unless I decide it is, in which case I just cut it out in the edits.
Then you'll Understood. And the Kenneagram, I don't know. Well, if you decide to do it, definitely let me know. I'm interested.
Well,
in
the Kenneagrams are great. Oh, the Magmagram.
The Magmagram. The M-gram. See, I'm going to spend some time tonight actually thinking about that. That's the kind of person I am. So,
well,
why not?
I mean, you could, well, based on all of your, so you could combine the experience you have in SEO, because there are certain things that work in SEO that you wouldn't expect. And you could create your own magma version of the Enneagram for SEO. So you could have different types of SEO has different personalities. Did you see where I'm going with this?
Like,
I have no idea.
The M-gram for SEO, like the archetype for SEOs, you've got the obsessive, the maverick, the trailblazer.
Yeah, and all of these different types of ads or different types of, you know, it's, I mean, the opportunities here are just beginningless.
I think so too.
Yes.
And I know I'm definitely going to let you know and obsess about this later.
Good, good. And I have it here on film that it was our idea. But anyway, so tell me more about, I noticed in your CV you talk about Australian Shepherds, because I have an Australian Shepherd Labrador mix, and everyone thinks that she's a pit bull, which is brilliant, because they all sort of give me a clear path. But she's not. She's very sweet. So Australian Shepherds, very cool. I presume you'd agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, he's in the other room knocking on the door, right? I've got like this noise canceling software, but he's knocking on the door because that means like, come play with me in our house. So he's in the other room. I love him.
Is it like a knock, knock, knock? Is there like a code or?
It's heavy pounding until we
heavy
bend
pounding,
at his will.
So just blunt instrument type stuff. But no, so tell me more about.
He's a border collie. He's a mix of every like herding dog. I mean, Keeler, border collie, Australian shepherd. Yeah. Like, and a few others I've never heard of.
Do you have any sheep? Because I mean, genetically, every atom in that dog's body is looking for a sheep right now.
Or, yep, a large herd animal or a sheep, exactly.
Or anything to herd. I mean, maybe you should get some chickens or something. Just give him something to herd because he's feeling unfulfilled. I can feel it from here.
He is. The only way, I mean, honestly, I like to run. So we'll just literally find a hill or a mountain and I run until I collapse. And then he says, Dad, let's keep going. And that's basically our relationship. So
right, have you tried something more flat? Because that might prevent the collapsing thing. Or maybe something downhill.
Good idea. For me, he'll be pissed, but I'll enjoy it more.
I'm just throwing out suggestions. You know, the thing about this podcast, we try and help wherever we can. So my suggestion right now is try downhill or a skateboard or something. I don't know. But anyway, I'm Revenue Zen.
A whole new career path after this.
So tell me about, you know, Revenue Zen and your approach to SEO. And because obviously it's a fairly intuitive thing. I mean, there is no handbook that really can deliver real sort of, you know, there's nothing digital, even though it's a digital environment. So what brought you to this? And give us a quick sort of spin on Revenue Zen.
Yeah, the juiciest of questions. So first things first, I actually sold. I owned an inbound marketing agency myself for 5 years. You know, we got to about $500,000 run rate. And then earlier in February, I sold that to Revenue Zen. And I jumped on the executive team as the chief growth officer, leading like innovation and all things growth, like product development now, because, you know, software is just as good as a service. So we're trying to make our foray into that. But Revenue Zen there's two sort of categories. So we used to focus very heavily on pure lead gen, like sales activities, LinkedIn lead gen. And what we've found is over time, like the market is heading to B2B sales cycles is heading towards multiple touch points that have nothing to do with a salesman and they want to learn. And so that points to inbound and SEO. So Revenue Zen today, we focus like all of our efforts on helping like really growth oriented B2B SaaS companies and professional service companies increase the quality and quantity of their pipeline with SEO, content marketing, and LinkedIn. So like really focused on inbound to grow, you know, lead generation. So,
and that's a very specific market. So B2B SaaS services are a country mile apart from, you know, B2C, I would have thought. So the language, the positioning, the education of your management team, I guess, that's a real change from being sort of direct to consumers. And is that the direction that your purchasers took? Or is that something that was just a clear directional decision from your part?
Yeah, they had started to see the writing on the wall and they were analyzing the return on investment from, you know, their previous campaigns and how much they were spending versus like their lead to close rate. And they kept saying like, let's keep doing this inbound thing more and more. Let's add content marketing into our book of business. Let's start to add the basics of SEO. And then when I started to have conversations with Alex, the CEO, I was talking to him about my client base and just the ridiculous like returns they were seeing when we did the strategies right. And so when I came in, I sort of just brought all that with me and they're like, okay, now we're fully going to be this type of company now. And it's just, we've just sort of taken off. We retrained all the strategists from the ground up, hired new folks and just, you know, gutted everything and rebuilt it. So that's what we're doing these days. So a little bit of both. I brought it with me, but yeah.
Yeah. And so your typical customer, give me a snapshot of who your typical customer would be.
So you'll be somebody who's at a director level, head of marketing. You've got probably a Series A round of funding. You just raised a little bit of money. You all have total understanding or most good understanding of who your customer is and your product is banging. You all might have employed a sales team. You might be using paid ads, but you sort of understand that over time, these paid ads are either going to cap out or start costing you a lot of money for the same lead costs. And they're really hard to close. And over time, you're like, what's this SEO thing where you type in words and people, you know, type in my product, come to me and already have their wallet out. And so basically what we do at that point for these companies who are anywhere from you know, 20 employees all the way up to like 250, 300 employees on average. We essentially attach ourselves on as like a chief of, you know, chief marketing officer or chief of digital strategy. We plan the whole strategy with them. We do a roadmap, we execute, and then we run it for them with our own team members. So you're somebody who has a marketing and probably a sales plan in place. Your product is awesome. You know exactly where you want to go and how fast you want to grow. You just have no clue about the depth of inbound. And so you want to vet, you're a smart person. So you want to vet somebody who has a good track record that can prove to be effective, like over the long term. We're talking 1 to 2 years on average for our customers.
So what you're doing is you're effectively becoming their marketing team. Is that on a, like an outsourced basis? Is that a fair analysis?
For inbound, and even it kind of trickles over because we have a lot of experienced team members who are like, yeah, by the way, your ad groups in Google are getting $300 per lead when it should be 20 in your industry. So we'll, it'll bleed over a little bit, but we don't do paid ourselves in-house. So,
and what do you think are the critical strategies that you would employ in an SEO campaign? So what are the key cornerstones of a successful SEO strategy?
Yeah, there's, like you said in the beginning, there's anybody who says there's a plug and play strategy, if you repeat these terms with these pages, they're not telling the truth. They're being dishonest, but there are repeatable buckets of tactics, essentially. So the first thing is, instead of just doing, like, people talk about keyword research and they look at it as, this is the amount of searches this is getting per month. Let's go make a piece of content for it. I look at it more fundamentally of like, hey, let's look at what comes up when somebody types this in. If it looks like my client's product and service, we mark that as, you know, want to perform for. So we call that based on the intent of the searcher. So search intent. So once you get a handful of those that match what the person's searching, you can probably with a high degree of confidence say, this person would be a customer or a prospect. And we get those keywords dialed in from a level of, will this turn into a customer? We build out content at every stage of somebody's buying decision-making process. So let's just say you want to do business with RevZen. You're probably going to type in, do I need an SEO strategy? What's inbound marketing for, like, does it help B2B? Then we're going to say, can I get like a B2B marketing SEO inbound strategy or demand generation strategy? You're going to need to consume those pieces of content before you're even ready to match vendors or compare vendors. Then we've got solutions pages that we might have one on our keyword research, our competitor analysis, our content marketing services. We might have case studies below that, customer testimonial. This is all stuff on our website, by the way, because we architect these pathways. And then all of a sudden, once you publish that and you've done things correctly, you all of a sudden, somebody can come into your website, learn about the problem, learn about the solution, learn about you, trust in you, and then get in touch, all without you ever. And that converts for us 4 times higher than any other channel, just somebody going through that path inbound. Pretty straightforward. And then there's the technical component, which is basically all the boring stuff, like that the search engines need to understand your site. So is your site loading correctly? You know, the little title that you see when you do a search and the description, all that good stuff. But that's a checklist. I don't really want to go into it on here. And then things like authority building is the last bucket. So when you reach out to Forbes and I do an article for them and they say, Ken from Revenue Zen has some knowledge to drop about SaaS SEO, and they give us a little link and a mention, that boosts the overall reputation of your site and the market and helps you rank better for your term. So it's a flywheel of sorts with good research, implementation of content, authority, and then the technical stuff as a foundation. So those are the buckets.
And I think the key phrases here really is just pathways, I think, because I think a lot of SEO approaches really is very flat in terms of someone will write some information or will, you know, publish an article in the expectation that certain keywords will be picked up. And then that article goes back to a single point on the website. And what you're saying is you need to create a journey. So in other words, you need to look at where that person is in the interest cycle or the buying cycle and match the content to that current state so that it satisfies that current demand. But then the next piece that they get, they don't just stampede direct to the website. There's more content that builds on that foundation. So by the time people come to you, they've actually gone through several layers of inquiry and been satisfied with the content to match that.
I would have sworn that you owned an SEO agency. That's exactly right. And then after that, it's just iteration, right? You see the data, you see conversion rates and those pathways, and you start, you know, tweaking over time and testing until you get more effective and lead costs go down. But yeah, that's exactly right.
And in order to get to that decision process, in other words, in order to be able to understand that people don't just want to have one piece of data and then go straight to the kill, as it were. How did you find that out? What, not so much journey, but what testing did you go through to be able to understand that actually that's what delivers that sort of 4X result?
Yeah. I mean, just testing on clients I went to school for sales and business development. So being able to actually sell deals, probably that I was a little bit underqualified for in the beginning to get people to trust me. And then being a very voracious learner and very curious person, I worked on a lot of client campaigns, like hundreds of them. And so that was thing sort of one, is just that I love to consume and synthesize information and then test very rapidly. Like in our organization, if you have an idea, you test it the following Monday and you tell the client, because they implicitly understand that when you sign the contract, you sign on for rapid testing and iteration over time so that we can learn quickly. We don't want to have these slow moving companies. That's why we don't target like Fortune 100s. I know some agencies, that's their business model. You know, I did work for one, wasn't a fan. So that's thing one, I would say, is just pretty rapidly like testing on my own website. So, you know, we practice what we preach. Those are our only lead sources, is SEO, LinkedIn, and referrals, because that's all we want to be known for. And that's all we do for our clients. And then I would say the other thing is, there's a few people on the internet that publish content that is incredible. And if anybody says that they haven't read it in the SEO industry, again, they're probably lying. I took like probably 60 or 70% of what these really incredible people had put out for free. That's in our industry, a lot is put out for free. We put out, you could learn SEO without paying us a dime just by going on our blog. It's just, that's costly. And there's a huge lead up and people aren't going to want to do it in their organization, but you could. And I just took all of their deliverables and their methodologies, and then I went that last, you know, 30%, 40% off the back of it in a way that I thought was a good system. So that's why we say competitive gap analysis is so powerful. It completely expedites the research process. And so on top of just loving to learn and to test, I did what anybody should do and did a gap analysis of who else is in the market and what they're doing and spun it up to make it either better or slightly different. So.
And I think, was it HubSpot that were one of the first companies to provide the actual infrastructure to be able to offer different types of content at different stages of the buying cycle? Was that, I think that's going back. So I think, yeah. Are there particular, you know, sort of software platforms that you would recommend or that you use to manage the content being delivered at certain stages?
Yeah, love HubSpot. Shout out to you all. The conference was recently, that was a lot of fun, but I would say HubSpot is a really good start because they have a really good foundational understanding of inbound marketing. Their free certification is amazing. If you just look at their resource center, you'll become a better inbound marketer. But I would also say there's more nuanced things of like, if you're doing keyword research, probably behooves you to use SEMrush. They categorize things by buyer intent for the keyword types. If you're looking at backlink profiles and your authority, a tool called Ahrefs is the best one for you. Probably if you want to have a CMS, I recommend don't code your own. Everyone out there, I know you're smart. Don't code your own content management software. Just use one of the established ones. So WordPress, Webflow, they're way more scalable. You can tweak them better. You have more control. So those are a few off the top of my head. Free ones, Google Analytics, Google Search Console tells you which keywords people use to come to your site and to track your conversions on the website from web pages. All free, all very straightforward. And then Google Data Studio, you can visualize your data and build your own reporting for free. So very powerful stuff.
But fundamentally, though, I think before one embarks on this sort of journey of actually pushing information out to potential clients, I think the important thing is really to understand who your potential customer is. And so as part of your role as a chief marketing officer or providing that sort of function, what sort of experiences do you have in dealing with the client companies that you have and getting everyone on board to understand and agree with what their message should be?
Yeah, that is probably, other than selling the deal, I would say that's the number one point of friction for us, because we can never match our efforts like 100% to what I think these founders and VPs and directors want. But what we help them understand is things from more of less of like, these are the demographics, like, you know, PayPal Pete might be somebody's target buying persona. We're less interested in that. And we're more interested in, okay, you have a product and it has features. But that's where most companies stop, is like, we're going to make the best features. And we might have some solutions mapped out. But we say, what does your product do? Okay, you write down all the list of features and what the product does. But then the next step is, who's the person that's going to be using this? And what are their like 5 to 10 biggest pain points and friction points in their job? And then based on those friction points, then we map those to solutions from a marketing perspective. So one of our software, it might be something like regression testing or software testing for companies without them having to do it manually. But really the problem wasn't that these, you know, heads of software testing in these companies, you know, wanted better software. They wanted a problem to go away for hiring somebody beneath them to be able to do it and hand it off to them. Yep. So then we started saying, instead of the QA engineers, we're actually going after the DevOps person who's beneath them. That's how you arrive at a target audience from an inbound marketing perspective and a lead gen perspective. I'm not knocking people going through those exercises of target personas, but usually we'll want people to understand how their product helps different use cases. And we'll work with them to align it to a pain and then a solution. And that's how you make money with a strategy. So that's our approach, is just, yeah, who do you serve? What do they? What keeps them up at night? How can we map that to these lucrative search terms and solution types is really the game for us. So,
and I think a lot of this really, I mean, you mentioned that you deal with companies that have, that not mature, but that have certainly moved out of the sort of early stage seed to a Series A type funding. But what sort of, are there any common issues that you see with companies that are still founder driven, sort of maturing past the point where, you know, the founder is the chief cook and head bottle washer?
Yep. Yeah. And I will say we do have a handful of our book. I forget what percentage, maybe 10 that is like seed and even a few that are pre-seed. But in general, like these, yeah, founder-led, founder still has the CMO cap on, the chief of everything hat on. They're segmented into these two very different types of people. The first is like, let's move quickly. I know exactly what I want. I'm going to take your word for it and get it implemented tomorrow. Those people are a dream. They're hungry, strategic, long-term focused, and like hungry for growth in whatever form. They want a spirit guy to just take, they want to, yep. You know, they want Rafiki to just take them by the hand and guide them. And what we do in that case is we're like, yeah, let's go. We'll map everything out for you. The folks, though, who are on the other end are like, this is my baby. And even though this keyword is going to be more lucrative and pay my bills, we're not going to use that language because we want to create this blue ocean strategy. Blue ocean, as far as software development, is an incredibly smart, wonderful strategy for product development. It's categorically, you know, impossible when it comes to keyword research or SEO, because there's steps you have to take to show up. Like if you don't have certain tags in the code, doesn't matter how much you want to reinvent the category, Google's not going to show up. So we have to educate them and qualify them in the sales process to make sure they understand they're going to have to make compromises. And so are we. We're going to have to change the messaging to tweak to make it fit their what's in their heart. And they're going to have to let off the reins a little bit so they can actually make some real money predictably.
Again, you know, so I suppose most of the challenge with this is really getting down to specific. So it's applying science and measurability to something that possibly has been quite, you know, nebulous to that point. So in other words, you know, what you're doing is you're taking phrases, words, data, measuring the impact of that data in terms of responses. And do you find that in most cases that type of measurement just simply doesn't exist? And the second part of that question is, how important is the ability to measure those types of results?
I mean, sometimes B2B, especially software companies that are often inventing categories, data, a lot of data doesn't exist. So in the beginning stages, for those kind of companies where we don't have a lot of data, we'll just have them do like a serious just mind dump. Just list every term that you've ever heard from a prospect or from a competitor in a sheet. And then we have to make some assumptions at the beginning of the campaign to even begin and to do our implementations. And from there, based on the first party data that we're getting, that's why Google's own Search Console tool is so valuable. after like the first couple of weeks, the first month, every single user impression, every single user click is used to inform the strategy going forward through our own first party data and our own user metrics. So that's a bit more of a contained system. And with B2B, you just have to see that. The other part of that is getting very comfortable with saying, this might only get 5 searches per month, but 3 out of those 5 people are going to buy from you because they're that laser focused on your offer to their pain point. So sometimes it's telling clients who are, you know, raising all this money and their investors are like, we want to see 1 million users a month, and they're starting off with 10, that your customer lifetime value is so amazing that we only need 200 total search volume to ROI for you. So let's stick to what we know works, and then we can go blitz scale once you've actually gotten started, because I've never had a campaign before. So again, expectation setting and then collecting data in a way that's driven by our own data that we can collect when they're just starting out. So,
and I think that's, again, one of the big learning points, isn't it? So as a business owner, what you want is volume. You want to feel that you're actually moving the metaphorical needle. But what you don't realize is actually you don't need that. What you want is quality responses. So you don't want 1,000 people reading your article and clicking on your site if none of them are your potential customers.
Exactly. And that's the folly of SEO. Like, that's the spooky part of it. People drive all this traffic, or they rank for all these keywords, and they tell us we're crushing it. And I'm like, pull up your CRM, let me see. And I see 0 qualified leads and 0 sales for the last 2 years, but they're crushing it. We crush it when we have MQLs that turn into SQLs. Absolutely. I mean, for our clients and sales and demos. So, yeah.
And you've been running this for a number of years now. And what would you say the biggest learnings or the biggest changes that you've seen over the last 7-8 years or so in terms of how the internet is, or how people are using the web, and how these types of marketing strategies have evolved over the last few years?
Yeah, 2 big things stick out to me immediately. The first thing is, I think that it was more, at least the feeling that I got was that it was more, I mean, it was almost seemed silly that a B2B company would, because I started doing this 7 years ago, would invest in SEO. Like, that was very local company oriented. Smaller businesses could take advantage of it, but bigger companies still believed in, like, you know, webinars, sales teams, billboards, and trade shows for a lot of these companies. And I think that's a shift I've seen, is that more and more companies are approaching us or on LinkedIn asking questions about SEO, like using our terminology. So they're already solution aware. That was a harder sell, and it was a harder foray for me when I would have conversations with bigger B2B companies. They would say, it would be, what is SEO? Or that's that black magic kind of stuff, because they didn't really understand it. Now people are saying, we need a link building strategy targeting these key phrases. And that is a high degree of sophistication. I would say that's the most difficult and costly and time intensive thing is building good links and domain authority. So that's the first big shift, is these companies are aware of the power of inbound and SEO. And the second thing I would say is, when I got started, there were less available tools, so less available SEO tech. And a lot of the stuff, I just had to get really good at sheets and macros and formulas. But now there's tools that just expedite that entire process, like the keyword intent. We used to do that manually. Like, I even did a little formula in Excel that would naturally match things to intent. But now the tool spits it out. So that's given a huge advantage to people being able to come in and do some good research. And it's less technical focus, more now it's about aligning content with the journey and just making sure you have the technical stuff checked off, where people used to spend tens of thousands of dollars on the technical because it was so, you needed like 2 developers and a technical SEO specialist. And so, 2 big shifts.
And just focusing more on the development of the social platform. So again, in parallel, we've seen the development of, you know, these key social media platforms, and we all know who they are. But LinkedIn is a bit of a mystery to many people. And LinkedIn is one of the sort of cornerstones of your SEO strategy. So, you know, what are the particular angles that you've seen that are most effective on LinkedIn as a platform?
Yeah, I think it's really about deciding and making it a habit, or less, I'm going to run 10 miles this week versus I am now a runner and I run every day and take one day off. And I think that approach to LinkedIn would already benefit most B2B companies, I think, more than they realize. But I'll kind of get away from that, because that's more of first principle thinking versus tactics. I know people always like to know what are the things that work. Start somebody at the executive level or leadership level. So we don't really take on anybody unless they are a director or above, but really we want the CEO. CEOs ROI most regularly with us, most and most quickly. So somebody with clout in the organization, as the kids would say. The second thing is treat your profile like a landing page. If you read mine, it's we design, you know, SEO and LinkedIn system, demand generation systems, or sorry, using proven systems versus tactics. We're more, you know, quant than we are fluffy. Our target audience understands that completely. I don't have to explain it to anybody. Nice picture, little background. My about me reads just like the copy would on our website. That's for a reason, because it's a funnel. We actually generate leads and business through our website. So those two things first. The third thing I would say is just reach out to people. So post regularly, but when people comment, add them and ask them something cool. Like I built an enchilada recipe. It's something I make often for my wife. And I just ask people like, do you want it? And a ton of people did the connection request, asked me for it, started conversations, and one became a lead within a week. And that's not to brag. It's just be a person and go talk to people and good things will happen over time. So I would say start there and make sure it's somebody high up in the organization.
And that's
not the company profile.
That's a common thread that I hear, which is this humanity. In other words, the, you know, there are horrible words out there, like, you know, very overused words like
synergy.
Well, no, it's not so much that, but you know, one is told to be, you've got to be very vulnerable, I think is the sort of nasty word I'm going to try and avoid. But this idea that you've actually got people who are taking time to make a connection that is not automated, like your response, you know, I've created this enchilada recipe. Would you like it? That's something that is just is manual that throws your persona across. And I think that's the thing that's, this concept of connection is something that is sadly lacking, I think, in many people's marketing strategies.
Yeah. And it's the automation, by the way, can exist in tandem with the strategy. It's, I actually love automation. The initial request was automated. I'm a huge inbound marketing nerd. I love demand generation. Hope you do too. Have a great enchilada recipe. Would love to connect. Let me know if you want it. And then I followed up manually. And I always follow up manually on the comments, but the outreach, of course, I don't want to go click profiles of people that I want to know. And I think that's where people get lost is they're like, I'll sell out if I use automation. And if I don't use automation, we'll never scale. We're just going to keep doing this manual stuff that isn't scalable. And I think they're missing the other dimension, which is effectiveness. And effectiveness lives in the gray area between those two things. So
yeah, and that's critical. So by reaching out to someone who has come back to you and says, yeah, okay, I'd like the recipe. You know, the fact that you make that manual connection is the same as picking up the phone to a customer who says, yeah, I'm interested in your product. Why would you try and automate that? You know, actually, that's yeah. The piece that you want to say. So it is the same.
Yep.
And, you know, that's a fascinating sort of study. Just switching gears slightly, so outside of all of this,
yep.
You know, what do you do for kicks, as it were? So, you know, I know you mentioned you like climbing mountains, dragging your dog behind you, but what one's brain can become so full of this sort of stuff. How do you decompress?
Yeah, I am in a period right now of like really intense focus on like, you know, rebuilding Revenue Zen into this beautiful resource and building software instead of just services. We're working on two products, but sort of before that, building other companies and products is a hobby of mine, like bestfreelancertools.com. I saw it coming a mile away, this whole great resignation thing. I've been doing this for like, 8 years now? I haven't worked for somebody. So I built that I think it's the biggest database or one of the biggest databases, if not top three, online right now. You can go type it in. There's like 378 tools to just help people navigate, and it's categorized beautifully. So things like that, I've always been attracted to. I was the kid with the lemonade stand. I sold candy out of my lockers. I sold my neighbor's trash one time on my parents' lawn. I took it and sold it. I get a lot of kick out of creating something and charging somebody and seeing if I can make a dollar from it. I'm not interested in becoming a billionaire like I think some entrepreneurs are. I like mastery. So building new things, well, me and my wife are going to buy some websites with some extra money and we're going to teach her how to do it and flip those. I love to run. I love to be out in the outdoors. We're in Brooklyn, New York now, but yeah. I grew up in Portland, Oregon. So there's a waterfall or a mountain, you know, just a stone's throw away. Camping, we love that stuff. And then just reading anything I can get my hands on. I know that sounds very nerdy.
It is great because, you know, particularly when you're building something, it's that instant gratification, isn't it? Where you build something, you put it out there, and if there is a response, you know, that's actually quite fulfilling. The fact that you've created something that someone else sees value in. So all of that is very, you know, accretive, I think, So, you know, that's hugely interesting. But changing gears yet again, is there no end to the gears I have in my changing gears cabinet? I'm going to introduce you now, Ken Marshall, to the Hooked on Startups quickfire questionnaire. Here, hold in on, my hand. Oh, he's rubbing his hands in glee, ladies and gentlemen. Okay. Yes, he's, flexing the shoulders, the head cracking. Question number one. Yeah. What is your favorite word?
Fantastic.
Question number two. What is your least favorite word?
Boop.
Did you say boo?
Boop. Yeah.
I can see why that's your least favorite word. Okay. The people that translate this video from video into words are going to have a real problem. It'll be really interesting to see how they actually transcribe that bit.
I'm just stream of consciousness. I'm just going. I'm not censoring it.
No. Same here. Question number three. What are you most excited about right now?
I am most excited about the transition becoming an agency to an agency, or sorry, a SaaS company with an agency arm in 2 years.
Fantastic. And what turns you off right now?
It's really cold in Brooklyn. It's been snowing the last 3 days.
Yeah, I know that feeling. I moved from California to Salt Lake City because I thought the weather was too good in California. So I'm with you there.
Yeah.
It's chilly here too, I can tell you. I won't be going out for about 6 months.
Agreed.
Question number five. What sound or noise do you love?
Ooh. When I'm making my espresso in the morning, the little drip into the cup, priceless.
The expectation of joy. You know, the trouble is whenever I make coffee, it's like 24 ounces of milky disappointment. So, you know, it's not quite the same. Question number six. What sound or noise do you hate?
Ooh, nails on a balloon or a chalkboard. It's the worst.
Yeah, I won't even go there. I mean, just imagining it, it just sends the hairs on the back of your head. Question number seven, and you may plead the Fifth Amendment here. What is your favorite curse word?
Ooh, that's tough. But it's rapid fire, so fuck.
You can take your time. Don't worry. It's, you know, we're here. No one's listening. It's okay. It's just you and me.
Okay. Let's see. I don't curse very often, but I do. There's something that just, it's like zesty about that. You can dribble it as an adjective. I've heard it used as a noun before. Like,
oh, it's the completely versatile. It's verb, noun, adjective, you know, everything. A pronoun. I don't think it's a pronoun, but it probably wants to be.
LinkedIn has aspirations. What are your pronouns?
Yeah.
I identify as...
Yeah, that's right. A yes, that's
yeah. Question. I'll go with that.
No, I mean, it is a joy. And whoever invented it, thank you, you know, from the bottom of our collective hearts. Question eight, what profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
I think I would study like macroeconomics or like behavioral psychology, just understanding how people interact with each other and how those interactions change them in the broader society really fascinates me. So I'd totally go do that, get a grant or something to do research. So
fantastic. And question nine, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Whenever basically anybody that handles fast food or has to clean up like a janitor. I can't do repetitive, non-meaningful to me tasks. I can't do it.
So this is the flip side of your enchilada recipe. You don't want to clear up afterwards.
Exactly. Shout out to Kim. You're lovely.
Yeah. Okay. And my
final
question.
The cook doesn't clean in our house.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Number 10, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
Well done, good and faithful servant. I mean, that's all there is to hear.
Well, no, I have had someone say, welcome, the bar's open. I think it's also equally rewarding.
For them. Yeah.
The bar in heaven has to be a free bar because I don't think they have any sort of payment there. I don't know.
I 0% chance, but perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, you never know. It'd be very disappointing if it was. You know, I left my wallet back on Earth. Sorry. Yeah, we've heard that one before. But anyway, Ken, thank you so much. My final question is, how do people find out more about you? How do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, go type in, you know, Ken Marshall Magma. It'll pop up on your browser. And there's a lot of good stuff. I love chatting with people. You can get that enchilada recipe and go on the website, read some stuff, you know, get a strategy. Those strategy calls are with me, and there's no pitch. It is literally, I look at your site, I talk to you, and I tell you what's wrong. I prescribe things. And I love having those conversations. So LinkedIn, get a strategy. Come talk to me. We'll hang out.
Fantastic. I suspect, however, if we do some analysis post publication of this podcast, the word that will have been searched most often would have been enchilada, actually. Out of all of this, you know, the one takeaway that everyone literally will have is that enchilada recipe. So, you know, from, you know, on behalf of both of my listeners, I thank you wholeheartedly for that. And but Ken, it's been a real pleasure having you on, and, you know, can't wait to stay in touch and you know, and get more, you know, words of wisdom and depth from you. And thank you again for being a victim guest on Hooked on Startup.
Right. Absolutely. Thank you for, you know, putting up with me and hanging out too. I appreciate it. So okay. Cheers.
It's my pleasure. Goodbye.